You're listening to Dine to Learn More with Trevor and Laura. Dine to Learn More is where we talk about death and bereavement to deepen our understanding of this inevitable part of life.
Hi, everyone. I'm Trevor Josephson.
Hi, I'm Laura Salimian. And we are sitting here on a nice sunshiny morning.
Yeah, it sure is.
And Trevor, I thought today it would be interesting to talk about the myths and misconceptions about seeing a counselor.
Yeah, Laura, I think that's a great topic for us to talk about today because I think a lot of people in our community might hesitate to reach out and call us or call a counselor out there because maybe there's some misunderstandings or misconceptions. Well, there's probably a few different reasons why that is, and I think it's good for us to talk about what those might be.
Yeah. So I think I'll just start with asking, in your experience with the clients you've had over the years, what do you think are some of the main reasons of why people have chosen to take this step to see a counselor?
Yeah, well, I think some people wait probably too long in the sense that they reach a place where they're falling apart, you know, things are crumbling around them. They're struggling to cope with just the day-to-day basics of getting by and accomplishing what they need to in a daily basis. And when that happens, it's kind of disappointing to see them come so late to get support. Yeah. Because if they had come sooner than that, maybe they wouldn't have things falling apart.
Right.
So I guess what I'm saying is they reach a point of desperation, perhaps.
Right. And so I guess that's the thing. Why do we wait to that? Why wouldn't we check in sooner?
Yeah. Well, I guess there's a lot of different reasons, but certainly people will perhaps have a misconception about what counseling is or who qualifies for counseling. You know, a lot of people might think, well, if I'm going to go see a therapist, then it must mean that there's something wrong with me, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Or I have some sort of condition, and that seems scary.
Right.
But I think you were saying earlier about how we're learning more about mental health, but that doesn't mean you have something if you're going to see a counselor.
Well, that's so true. I mean, we don't have any problem going to see a doctor to maintain our physical health.
Right.
And we don't really have a lot of shame attached or judgment
right.
attached. You know, if we have, we're struggling with a diabetes or a blood pressure issue, we go to see a doctor that helps us with that. But when we're struggling with emotional issues or issues of a personal nature, that's what do we do with that? What do we do with the mental health part of it? I think we're starting to improve a little bit in our culture of being more open to going to see a counselor, a psychologist, a social worker,
right.
to talk about some of those aspects of our life to maintain our mental health.
And I think that's part of the thing, is the word mental health is now always associated with other maybe conditions, but you're just saying, no, this is the health of our minds versus our physical health of our bodies.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, you could even look at it like maintenance of our mental health.
Right, because we go for regular checkups. There's things that everybody keeps having to do every few years with a doctor, and there's no shame in going to get it
no.
done. And yet there are people who still choose to not do those. And
that's true.
A lot of them are fear-based.
Yes.
Of why they're not
fear.
Going.
There we go, fear. And whenever I hear about fear, I automatically say, well, what is the lack of knowledge or understanding that's behind that fear? Because
yes.
that's usually where fear comes in, is that we don't understand something. What we don't understand, where we don't have enough information or knowledge about, we tend to move into a fear position as a way of responding to a perceived threat of some sort.
Right, like I don't want to look at that, so I'm going to do this other stuff to turn myself away.
Right.
But that's where counseling can help, because it's not that they're going to, you have to look at this and face it. But there's this infographic that I've seen online, and whoever made it, I think, was genius. And it shows someone sitting, and it shows their thought bubble, and it's just a mess of colored strings
knotted everywhere. I've seen that one.
Yes, see, it's very popular. And then it shows them sitting in a session with a counselor, and the counselor's taking that mess and laying out each string,
right,
so they can now individually see things, because it was, like you said, you can't cope. It's just all jumbled in your head, and you need someone with that skill who can pick out those strings very gently and say, hey, let's just take a look at this for a minute.
Yeah, that's a wonderful analogy of what may happen in a typical counseling session. I think a lot of people wonder, well, what happens in a counseling session?
Yes.
You know, that, again, part of the fear, the unknown, not knowing, okay, well, am I going to go there, and am I going to have to, you know, expose the deepest, darkest parts of my inner experience? Am I going to find out things that I don't want to find out about myself? And that's not necessarily what counseling is about. I mean, counselors will work with a client to determine what their goals and objectives are, what they want to pursue, what is important for them, and maybe they're not even sure of that. And so sitting down with a counselor might help them to figure out, well, you know, there's something that isn't working for me in my life, but I'm not sure what that is, and I'm not sure how to go about figuring out what to do about that. So I guess what we're talking about is a non-directive approach versus a directive approach. So a counselor will follow the lead of the client, but provide opportunities for the client to explore different aspects of that inner experience. And like you said, the analogy of the pulling out the different strings and untangling all of that, a counselor has skills in helping the client to do that. The counselor does not come into this situation saying that they have the answers.
Right.
Right? So the counselor believes that the client has the answers inside of them, but right now they're just not able to access those answers to those questions, right?
That makes sense. I think of like either a seed, and it's in the ground, and the counselor helps show the client how to water the ground and, you know, nurture it so things can come up and out and be, you know, whereas sometimes we come and go, I don't see anything. I just see dirt.
Yeah, where do I start?
Yeah,
how do I do this?
And that's, I think, like you said, the counselors bring skill, knowledge, and experience in looking at an issue.
Yeah.
And not just, yes, we see, I can't cope. Okay. And then they know the right questions to pull out. And that's the difference sometimes between being able to talk to a friend or a family member, because they don't have that same skill set. And they might choose things that are still biased towards themselves.
Yeah, certainly. Friends and family members are wonderful supports, wonderful resources for everyone. However, they, like you say, they might not understand what works best for a person to unravel some of that tangled stuff going on, and they might have their own objectives. You know, well-meaning, well-intentioned,
of course, all out of love.
But they have an investment in that relationship, and they might have an idea that it's their role to not only help the person, but maybe to fix the situation for them. They might be very directive, they might be very advice giving, and that might not always be the best solution for the individual. So a counselor can help in a non-directive way. A counselor is not going to sit there and give advice and tell the person what to do. They will help the person to find out what they choose as a solution for themselves.
To choose the path that they're comfortable with each step taking.
So the counselor is more like a companion or an ally, an advocate, right? Which is a different role in some ways than a friend or a family member might be.
Right, yes. Because I mean, we've all have friends and family. They want to build us up. They're saying all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, it feels good, but it's not the same as being validated by someone who isn't pumping you up.
Yeah.
Isn't saying, you're so wonderful. You got this. You're
right.
Strong. They're sitting there and listening and going, okay,
mm-hmm.
Now what do you think? Like, it's a very different experience, but in such a good way.
Right. Definitely. So thinking back to the question about, well, what are the myths and misconceptions,
yes.
I guess, about going to talk with a counselor, and we're talking here about grief counseling, because that's what we do here, and end-of-life counseling. So what are the myths and misconceptions that might get in the way? Again, we talked about people feeling like, well, I have to be falling apart. I have to be like so desperate before I
yes.
go and talk to a counselor, because then, you know, my mental health is collapsed. Well, I would like to see people come sooner than that, right? Because it's
right.
more in the preventative approach rather than the wait until you crash kind of approach. Because then there's a lot more work that has to be done. I mean, you're starting from a place of picking up the pieces, and it'd be nice to go and get some support before the pieces all fall apart.
Well, I think there was a collective narrative of stiff upper lip,
yeah.
stay strong,
yeah.
and you're just supposed to endure.
Mm-hmm.
But these are things that were coming out of, I'm guessing, world wars
yeah,
that
yeah.
created those narratives, but we are not in that anymore,
mm-hmm.
and we also know the why it's needed, why we need to
right.
work these things through, not just stuff it down.
Yeah, so there might be a sense of, well, I'm weak if I have to go
yes.
and talk to somebody about these things that I'm struggling with, or about my emotions. I must be weak if I can't do that myself. And certainly, you do it yourself. This is the irony of it, is
yeah.
that going to see a counselor, you actually do the work yourself. And so you are availing yourself of an opportunity to express your strength in a way that a counselor can help a person to define for themselves. And you know, we talk about the definitions of what is strength. Maybe being able to go to those deep places inside that you can't really access maybe entirely on your own. Yes, there's many different ways that we can explore inner self-awareness and inner self-development. However, as we've been saying, counselors are qualified and trained to help people to really get to those places deep inside of us. And so it takes strength, actually, to do that.
Totally. True strength over, because you're fighting against fear and pride and the not thinking you're weak. You're fighting
yeah.
all these things
mm-hmm.
to go, nope, I need
yeah.
some help here.
Yeah, exactly.
So what do you think are some, is there, we've talked about the stigma of maybe going, oh, I don't want to be seen as that I have something when that's not what it is. And then we've talked about fear and things like that. Do you think there's anything else that keeps people from seeing a counselor?
Yeah, I think those are the main things. The fear of what's going to happen in the counseling session.
Mm-hmm.
Now, counselors move at the pace that the client, it works for them. So, and the counselor doesn't push the client, right? They
right.
walk alongside of them. So it's a very gentle, respectful, considerate approach. The concern that there's some shame involved, the stigma, as you said, you know,
mm-hmm.
which we're thankfully we're really doing a good job in our society of getting past,
yes.
so that we're not carrying the stigma of mental illness, mental health around like an albatross around our
yes.
necks, right? That we're starting to equate mental health in the same category as physical health and,
mm-hmm.
and the importance of maintaining that for us. And there's so
yeah.
many ways to do that, right? I mean, going to see a counselor isn't the only way to do that. It is a way that is very effective and works for many people.
Right.
But yeah, so I think those are the main things, the fear and the sense of stigma. And, oh, I'm strong, I don't need this, I can do it on my own kind of approach.
Right. And what, in your experience, has been in clients who maybe were a little apprehensive when they first started with you, like, did you hear comments afterwards about their experience and how their mind maybe has changed towards counseling?
Yeah, a lot of people, I always like to ask people, have you ever done counseling before, you know, as a way of understanding at what point are they coming into it. The people who have done counseling before, I gotta say, they come in with a head start on things. They have a developed sense of what works for them, what doesn't work for them. They can draw upon what they've learned from the past and use that now. But for a lot of people, they'll say, oh, I should have come sooner. Why did I wish I hadn't waited so long, because this is really helpful for me. And I could see where if I had been learning some of these things about myself earlier, I wouldn't have gone so far down a specific path of suffering and struggle. It would have been much easier for me had I come here sooner.
Right. I'm also curious if you would think that if someone is grieving, that maybe seeing a counselor is almost like a way of letting go of their grief, and that they didn't love them as much, or they didn't, by letting that go, do you know what I'm trying
yeah.
to, I'm just wondering if that's part of it. Again, fear-based, mm-hmm. but you know, I don't want to go and talk about this because it's almost like the pain I'm feeling somehow keeps me closer
right.
to
sure.
the person.
Oh yeah.
But
yeah.
that's not, of course, again.
Yeah.
It's not how it is when
no.
you work through it. But
no, not at all.
Yeah, I'm just curious if you think
mm-hmm.
there's something in that.
Yeah, some people may hold on to that and as a way of continuing to feel connected with their loved one. It might sound strange for some people to think that, you know, by holding on to the pain, you in a way hold on to the loved one, but it does work that way for some people. And so what we're saying is that you're not going to let go of that person that you cherish and love so deeply and always will. You will perhaps find a new way of carrying them forward with you in life that
right.
doesn't have to include all of that pain with it. So we're talking about a continuing bond that a person
right.
will learn to, it's kind of transforming the type of relationship, right?
Yeah.
And yes, that word that's scary for some people in grief and loss, letting go
mm-hmm.
is part of that process. But in grief work, we see that people let go of a type of connection with the person in order to find a new way of having a connection to the deceased person.
Right.
And it's a beautiful thing when you see it happen, and it's part of our human capacity. We can do that. We have the inner ability to do that with our emotions, with our thoughts, and with our spiritual awareness. We are able to do that, but some people perhaps need a bit of support in finding out
right.
how to do that, and that can become a major part of grief counseling.
Well, we've talked in a previous podcast about connection after loss and how you can feel almost untethered.
Mm-hmm.
And so it sounds like you've made a misplaced connection to the pain. And so therefore letting go isn't letting go of the person, but you're letting go of the pain.
Mm.
And you're still holding that
yeah.
connection to the person. We've just
sure.
changed a different...
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that's a great way of explaining it. And as human beings, wow, we're capable of some incredible
yes.
Achievements, inner achievements within ourselves. We have the emotional capacity to experience amazing transformations.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, is there anything else that you wanted to speak to on this topic?
I don't think so. I mean, it's kind of interesting because before we started this recording today, I had this question, where does that word head shrinker come
right.
from, right? That that term that is used for psychiatrists and psychologists. And we found out that it actually dates back to 1895.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And it was very... popularized perhaps in the 1960s and 70s, but as a reference to this concept of what happens when a client goes to speak with
a
therapist, yeah, a shrink, that it's kind of like the what happened with it refers back to the shamans or the witch doctors of other cultures from the past that may or may not be legitimate or you know truthfully or respectfully understood by colonial powers that had contact with these cultures, a misconception about the role of a shaman in these cultures, right? So I think it's really interesting because in a way I see that counselors do serve that type of role as the shaman,
yes,
for the community, so that people will explore their inner selves and how they connect in the bigger world that they're in and how to kind of sort through some of those big questions like, well, what are we here for? What is this all about? And the counselor is not going to provide the answer to that question, but the counselor believes that each individual has the answer to those questions,
right,
inside of themselves. So in a way, like the shamans from other cultures, counselors can help a person to explore that inner world,
yeah,
that also connects with the outer world. And so, yeah, interesting reference to that word head shrinker.
Yeah, I love a little history lesson, that's for sure. Well, we did this for anyone who's curious about counseling.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted to talk about this for anyone who's unsure if they should be seeing someone. Maybe they think, well, I don't feel like I'm in that group, so I shouldn't be seeing a counselor.
Right.
But that's not the case. So if you are feeling the need for help, we ask you to seek it. We are here for anyone who is dealing with grief and loss,
mm-hmm,
and please contact us. And also, it doesn't need to be recent. If you,
yes,
are struggling with someone you've lost, it doesn't, there's no timeline.
No, there isn't.
And so that could be another barrier. People think, oh, it's past the,
yeah,
first year.
Yes.
Why am I still
sure,
feeling sad?
Sure.
So there is no timeline. And so if you are wanting some help, please give us a call. If you know someone who maybe needs to listen to this, please pass it along.
Yes, and thank you everybody for joining us today and listening to our conversations. If you have any suggestions or questions, please don't hesitate to send us. We'll have contact information available on our podcast website, and please make suggestions of topics you'd like us to discuss.
Yes, that would be great. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. Thank you for being open to learning more about death and grief. Stay tuned for more episodes by following us on Instagram or Facebook.